Technorama episode 540. Ow, my knuckles!
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
I'm here for the karaoke shootout.
Over there, in the media corner.
He had to stop and think about it.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here are your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Hello and welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If you are new to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you are returning, then welcome back. You know what to expect. My name is Chuck Tomasi, broadcasting from the Binary Studio in sunny Phoenix, Arizona. And joining me, just on the other side of this here virtual table, is the one and only Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing well. And put up a Don't Stop Believing from Journey. My karaoke goes
just
song.
A small town girl, yeah. Living in a lonely world.
You sound like William Shatner trying to do it.
He took the midnight train going anywhere.
So what's your go-to karaoke song?
You know what, it depends. If my voice is worn out, I'll go something falsetto like Journey. Or maybe Queen, or maybe even Prince's Kiss. But if I really want to have some fun, I'll do, I can't remember. It's Bon Jovi. Is it Living on a Prayer? Something like that.
Yeah. Okay.
Because you can really trash your voice for the night doing that.
Right.
All righty. Enough about karaoke. What do you say we do a podcast of our own?
Yeah. Tonight is karaoke night in Technorama.
But first, we've got feedback.
Cool.
Letters. Oh, we get letters. We get your letters every day. Mailman,
on Sunday.
Reach right in and pull one out.
Reach right in and squirt one out.
Those letters. I love those letters. Let's find out what you've got to say.
Oh, boy.
Mailman.
So cool we even get mail on Sunday.
We do record this on a Sunday. Hey, we do have mail on a Sunday. Because guess what? We've got an email. You can get email every day of any day. The first one's from Jolene McFarland. The Jolene that I spoke about a few weeks ago from the massage clinic. And she had a correction for us, which is how we get most of our listener feedback, right?
Right.
She said, thank you for the shout out in your show. I don't just do cosplay at the Renaissance Festival. I'm a stage manager for one of the stages. Here's a photo of me doing my rounds, hydrating others who work there as well. Oh, we should have had the picture in the still store for Donna.
Darn. Well, I put a note in there that it will be in the show notes, so I'm sorry.
All right, thank you. It looks like a Dutch master's painting. I saw this and I honestly thought it was one of those, 8x10 foot paintings you see on a wall in a museum. It's cool. It is really cool. And I look closely and I go, oh my gosh, I know that woman's face.
Yeah, it does look like a Renaissance painting or something.
Yeah, it's like a Renoir or a Monet, or I'm not an art person, so I'm kind of grasping at straws here. But you get the meaning of what I'm talking about if you go look up the Dutch masters. So thank you, Jolene. I also have some actual factual postal mail here. This one.
What? Oh, yeah, there you go.
With an airplane on it is from Craig, Harrison, Kim, and Terry. Who's Terry?
My mother-in-law.
Ah, okay. You took your mother-in-law.
I made them all
cruise.
Sign it. I was like, you know what? What the heck?
Okay. And it says, greetings, Tomasi's. And then, of course, our address on the back, which I'll share with you if you want to send us postcards. There's another one here from the Hammer Museum, and I'm assuming you can't touch this.
You have to wear these weird pants when you go through it.
That's right. From Haines, Alaska.
Yes, and to be honest with you, it is a real place. There is a Hammer Museum.
And of course, Craig being clever like he is, he wrote on the postcard, We nailed it. Nailed it or failed it. He nailed it.
Hey, if you ever get a chance to go check it out, it's a small place. But in the small place, they have 2,000 hammers. In the entire collection that includes what's not displayed, there's 7,000. The guy started the museum when his wife told him he had to get the stuff out of the house.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll start a museum. He ended up starting one.
Well, that's been my threat about computer stuff for years.
Yeah, well, people started bringing him hammers. So he ended up, like I said, with this huge collection. And from what I understand, there's only another hammer museum, and it's like in
Poland.
Norway, yeah. Poland. Yeah, it's like somewhere over there. It's somewhere like that. So it was kind of neat to see. And I think we paid $20 to see actually three different museums, which was that one, and there was two others in the area. But it was cool. So if you get a chance, go check out the Hammer Museum. And you know what? I took some pictures there.
Yeah.
I'll put up a photo album, put a link in the show notes so you can go check them out.
It kind of reminds me of, you know, Bubba from Forrest Gump going through the shrimp thing. Ball peen hammers, clawed hammers, sledgehammers. There's just about every kind of hammer you can imagine, Forrest.
It's funny you say that because I was in there saying that. I was started going, got ball peen hammers. I just went through them all that were all listed on the wall. Sounded like Bubba.
Tack hammers, shoe hammers.
Got ice hammers and
jack hammers.
Yeah. They had some glass ones. They had
glass hammers.
Yeah.
Craig, there's something just wrong about that.
I think it's for display only. Okay. But they had a hammer that was like tiny. And he said, that is not even the smallest one. You have to go find the other one, the smallest one. And
how would you get, what's the point?
I don't know.
You know, there's something comedic about using a teeny little hammer to pound in like a railroad spike.
It'd take forever.
You stay there until it's done.
Yeah. I'm 103. I finally got this thing driven.
A millimeter. But no,
it's pretty cool. I mean, they had all kinds of stuff. I'll post the, it's not, I didn't take every picture of the entire museum, but I will post an album, photo album with them in there.
Very nice. Thank you very much. All right, if you want to get in touch with us, you can do so by reaching out. Let our singers finish their song. You can reach out to us on the listener line at 707-530-2428. Or you can email us, technorama@chuckchat.com, like Jolene did. Or you can just find us on the Facebook. You can also, you know, all this stuff is on our website. If you just want to go to chuckchat.com/technorama, you can find all that information. What do you say we do the history thing?
I'm ready. I've been waiting for it all week.
I thought we were going to have to roll some dice.
We can.
All right.
Wait, where'd mine go? Oh, it fell.
No,
on the
you
floor.
Don't have to. It's just us. On this day in history for August 1st, 2018, because that's when we released the podcast. It is the 213th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 152 days remaining in 2018. It was on this date in 1498 that Christopher Columbus becomes the first European to visit what is now Venezuela.
And 244 years ago today, British scientist Joseph Priestley discovered oxygen gas. We've all been breathing over all these years.
Thank goodness he discovered it.
I know. Corroborating the prior discovery of the element by German-Swedish chemist Carl Wilhelm Scheele.
Scheele. I don't know. We'll work on that. Yeah. It was on this date in 1834 that slavery is abolished in the British Empire as the Slavery Abolition Act of 1833 comes into force.
And on August 1st, 1855, the first ascent of Monte Rosa, the first highest summit in the Alps.
Second highest.
What did I say?
You said first.
Sorry, second.
Whoa, it just got gruesome.
It said the first ascent, the second highest summit in the Alps.
Okay. Henry Perkey patents shredded wheat on this date in 1893.
He was happy about it.
It's probably made a lot of money off of that, and we're still eating it. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, 111 years ago today.
111 years ago.
111, excuse me. The start of the first scout camp in Brown Sea Island, the origin of the worldwide scouting movement.
I thought you'd like that one.
Yeah, I knew about that. That's right.
Oh, you knew about that. You had to study that to get your badge?
Actually, if I'm not mistaken, that's where they started the Arrow of Light.
All right. Ask your son, who's now practically an Eagle Scout or a double Eagle Scout or whatever he's been doing. Ask him how many years ago that was. What year was that? And where was it? Give him a trivia question.
You can ask Kevin Devon, too, by the way.
That same date in 1911, Harriet Quimby takes her pilot's test and becomes the first U.S. woman to earn an Aero Club of America Aviator certificate.
It was also on this date in 1936 that the Olympics opened in Berlin with a ceremony presided over by Adolf Hitler.
My money's on Jesse Owens.
Yeah. Right.
Lutz Long will do well in the long jump, but not quite as much. August 1st, 1957, United States and Canada formed the North American Aerospace Defense Command, also known as NORAD.
War games
wouldn't have been the same without it.
Or Santa. The Concert of Bangladesh, organized by the former Beatle George Harrison, is held at Madison Square Garden in New York City on this date in 1971.
Wow. I remember that.
You do?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't there, but I remember it happening. 37 years ago today, MTV begins broadcasting in the United States, and here's its first video. Yes, all you trivia buffs know this. Video Killed the Radio Star by the Buggles.
Video Killed the Radio Star. It was also on this date in 1984 that commercial Peat Cutters discovered the preserved bog of a man named Lindau Man.
It was a mix Lindau. Up of Linux and Windows? What?
Yeah, Lindau. Yeah, at Lindau Moss, Cheshire, England.
Happy birthday goes out of the state. I'm sorry, I just got this picture of the dude. He's wearing a jacket with two logos on it. We would call him Lindau Man. Why not call him
holding the Microsoft flag?
Winix Man.
Yeah, Winix.
Happy birthday goes out this day to American soldier, explorer, and politician, fourth governor of Missouri Territory, William Clark. You know what he's famous for. Born on this date in 1770.
Yes, and born August 1st, 1779, American lawyer, author, and poet, Francis Scott Key.
Oh, Jose, can you see? By Don Zerli. There's people named in this song, right?
Yeah.
American.
I think Creedence Clearwater Revival actually covered that one.
American astronomer and academic Maria Mitchell was born on this date in 1818.
Born August 1st, 1819, American novelist, short story writer, and poet Herman Melville.
Call me Ishmael.
I'm getting all the poets today.
You'd be amazed what I found. I'll get to this as soon as I'm done with this. It started out with really interesting factoid on Wikipedia this morning. Walter Gerlach, German physicist and academic, was born that same date in 1889.
American actor, singer, director, producer Dom DeLuise was born 85 years ago today. I loved him in Cannonball Run, man.
Whenever he would start laughing so hard, he couldn't get words out. It was great.
Yeah.
Yves Saint Laurent, Algerian French fashion designer, co-founded Yves Saint Laurent. If he co-founded, who was the other person? They didn't get their name on anything. It's born the same day in 1936.
And born August 1st, 1942, American singer, songwriter, and guitarist. We'll throw a poet in there, too. Jerry Garcia.
And ice cream maker. No.
Yeah. Supporter.
Also turning 72 today is American colonel, pilot, and astronaut Richard O. Covey. Not Richard O. Covey.
Japanese astronaut and engineer Kiyoshi Wakata is 55 today.
And turning 39 today is American actor, director, producer Jason Momoa. Look at that. The music's going.
And Aquaman.
Listener birthday is on August 4th. Clark and Diana, awesome people, and the kids of Gary from Jacksonville. And August 6th, here physically but not in the studio, Julie Tomasi. Happy birthday. That's the way it was on this day in history for August 1st, 2018. So I opened up Wikipedia this morning to do the on this day in history.
Okay.
There are like five emperors born today.
Wow.
Two Japanese, one from... It was like craziness. I went, what is going on? I mean, there were...
National Imperial Day.
Spanned over about 1,000 years, but I'm like, what? Yeah, it's Imperial Birthday Day. They should make a national or international holiday about this. It was nuts. I've never seen something like, okay, that's interesting. Whoa, another one. The first five out of six entries were Emperor's birthdays.
Makes you go, Oh, yeah. By the way, I do remember back in the day, I don't know what the ever stat, I don't know what the ultimate demise of it was, but there was a Linux distribution called Lindos.
I seem to remember something about that. That's why it kind of struck me funny.
And I think, I'm trying to remember. Well, I think
didn't
their
that go
big
up against
was,
Wine? I mean, just so you could run your...
Linspire. Here you go. It was Linspire, and they were making Lindos. And I think their big thing was they were trying to bundle Wine, the open source project let you run Windows applications in there. So, but at that point, Wine was in a big, is still heavy development slash, you know, not very stable.
If you could only take wine and distill it down. Never mind.
Do you know, by the way, wine is actually pretty useful nowadays.
Is it? I haven't heard anything about it in probably 10 years.
Yeah. It's one of those projects. That's kind of funny. It's like 8 years goes by and they go, all right, we're at 0.4.
Did you notice on our birthday calendar that we had Clark and Diana were awesome people and the kids of Gary from Jacksonville. Are we on our second generation of podcast listeners now?
The kids have probably grown up and gone to school and have their own children now. So now
have a podcast more popular than ours.
Yeah, they got their own now.
If you want to get your name on the birthday calendar, go over to chuckchat.com/wiki. And we'd be happy to give you, your kids, your other family members. You need a reminder of when their birthday's coming up. Let us know. We'll put it on the calendar. No, you put it on the calendar and we'll give you a shout out. Thank you very much for joining and listening and all that good stuff. What do you say we do some actual news?
By the way, tell Julie I said happy birthday and I'm disappointed she didn't come on the show.
I will do that. Well, she's got to get some rest because they're driving across country starting bright and dark early tomorrow.
That's true. Yeah.
So we want her and my future son-in-law to be safe and travel well.
And not the son-in-law. Yeah. Just kidding.
He's not on the insurance plan yet.
Oh, yet.
keep him going. All right. Let's see. Is this good news or bad news? This is bad news. Here, we'll play this one.
Bad news, fancy men.
That's right. It's bad news because it's the end of an era. Well, as of a couple of weeks ago, this may actually have come to pass. There is just one Blockbuster video store left in the U.S. The last two Blockbuster stores in Alaska. Greg, were you there? Did you see him?
You know, it's funny because I saw the story when I was in Alaska, and my immediate thought was, I want to go take a picture at the building. But I was nowhere near Anchorage or Fairbanks.
You know, when we do the media corner thing, this one, here.
Yeah. Welcome That's to Blockhead Video.
That was recorded at a Blockbuster video.
They must have bought millions of those little doorbells because that's the same doorbell they had here. As soon as you played it, I recognized it. I was like, yeah.
Well, the last two Blockbuster stores in Alaska are shutting their doors for good next week, which would have been last week, according to the Anchorage Daily News, which means there's just one remaining relic of the video rental giant still up and operating in the entire United States. The final Blockbuster storefront standing is located in Bend, Oregon. It outlasted two stores in Alaska, one in the city of Anchorage and one in Fairbanks. That will officially close up shop on Monday, July 16th, despite John Oliver's attempts to keep them alive by sending the store's memorabilia from Russell Crowe movies. When the last two stores in Alaska finally lock up next week, it will mark the end of a quirky final act of a forgotten video rental chain. I don't think it was forgotten. I mean,
I wouldn't say forgotten. No. Well, I'd say increasingly it is because, you know, there's kids that's grown up that don't really have any memory of it.
Yeah, they'll know it like, never mind. Though the parent company Dish Network started shuttering storefronts around the U.S. in 2013, Blockbuster managed to maintain a stronghold in Alaska for whatever reason, driven primarily by long winters and pricey, occasionally unreliable internet connections, as per the Washington Post. According to data from HighSpeedInternet.com, Alaska is third to last in internet connectivity in the U.S. and just 62. I mean, it kind of makes you wonder who last and penultimate last are.
Yeah.
And just 62% of its population has access to what would be considered broadband speeds of connections of 25 megabits.
You know, I just can't believe this is the classic story of they were their own worst enemy, Blockbuster, because they were the name in after movie, you know, rentals and the whole thing. And then I think they even had an opportunity to buy Netflix at one point, but they ended up flushing it all down the, you know, yep. trying to stick with their own old business model. It just didn't work. If I remember right, on my TiVo, there was even a Blockbuster. They tried to do streaming, but it was too late.
It is interesting because that officially holds up down as in my tradition of every video store we've had a membership at closed.
This is just another one.
And we would move on. Now, we haven't had a Blockbuster membership since 2012, 2013, mm-hmm. about the time we signed up for Netflix. And what do we need this for anymore?
I enjoyed going to the Blockbuster and kind of looking for them. And now I look back on, I'm like, it was kind of fun to go over there on a Friday night trying to find a movie or a Thursday or, you know, before the weekend and get a movie. I didn't return it and had to pay the rental fees. That part sucked.
Hey, at least you didn't have to pay a rewind fee on DVDs.
Right. Well, you know, another part of this whole thing, and not necessarily just Blockbuster, but, and I've talked about this before, my friend, his family had a video store. It was a family owned one.
Yeah.
And, you know, we hung out there all the time. We always got movies. We were able to watch them before we put them, they put them on the shelf. There was a convenience store in the front and a video store in the back. So I worked in the convenience store and I'd go hang out with Mike, my friend, in the back. And yeah, we would routinely go, oh, Nightmare on Elm Street's on video this week. Oh, let's take it out. You know, or any of the movies that had not been on video, but all of a sudden they were releasing all the back catalog.
Yeah.
Oh, that movie. I love that movie. Let's go watch it. You know, catch up on stuff you hadn't seen in 5 or 10 years. Oh, man, these are good times, man.
I will admit, it was easier to browse around a Blockbuster store than it is Netflix.
You could go
to the section
that
you wanted, and you could look through the movies. You go, seen it, maybe, okay. And you know, in about 10 minutes, you came out with an armful of whatever you wanted that you mm-hmm. knew you liked. I swear I can go on Netflix for 30 minutes and come away with nothing.
I agree with you. Netflix, even Amazon, I think is even worse, but Netflix, when you go there, they have that stupid side scrolling set up.
Well, and please give us an option to turn off autoplay.
There is an option in there. You can turn it off.
Okay. You're going to have to show me that one, buddy.
But the side scrolling, when they introduced that, I was like, oh, this is like a chore, but you can click on the category and it'll give you a little more of a grid. But Amazon, I think for a long time, they would put like in the search results, season 1, season 2, season 3, to make it look like they had more in their library than they actually did. You know, so you know what I'm saying? They would split it up so it looked like you had to scroll a little longer and go, oh, they got a lot of stuff in here. But no, actually they don't.
Yeah.
You know,
there's still a lot of stuff they had on DVD that they never put online. And that was disappointing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think it's necessarily their fault.
I just don't understand. If you've got distribution for one media, I don't know. It's not my business model. I don't quite understand it, but it seems like if you've got the license to distribute it. Does anybody do the DVDs anymore? Probably the people in Alaska.
Yeah. I've heard a few people that still get DVDs. So I don't know.
End, I mean, we rented them until probably 2012, 2013. And until we got, you know, the streaming library caught up with some good content. But the DVDs we were getting were just in beat up shape. I mean, some of them you'd have to return once or twice. Go, well, come on, man. You know, I'm watching a series and I'm on season 4 of 7. And nope, this one doesn't play. This one doesn't play. Come on.
Yeah.
Anyway, the hazards of having physical media. which we all know all too well. Let's do another story, shall we? We kind of wore that blockbuster one into the ground.
And we could talk about that some more.
Okay. What else do we have for news? We have some good news, interesting news, science news.
Yes. So supermassive black hole stretches starlight, proving Einstein was right again.
Again.
Actually, I thought that sounded like a title for a 70s song. Supermassive black hole stretches starlight.
There's one of Sam Roberts' new band names, Supermassive Black Hole.
So Albert Einstein's theory of general relativity is magnificent. For 100 years, it has been consistently predicted all sorts of wacky phenomenon.
Wacky phenomenon. What's a wacky phenomenon? Hey, look, kids, it's a rainbow at night.
Watch this. I can do this with my hands.
The rubber pencil trick.
Yeah.
Einstein predicted it.
Yeah, he predicted all this wacky stuff. Scientists have later observed through space all these wacky phenomenon that he said would come true. One international team is now announcing that a 26-year-old observation campaign was once again confirmed the theory. Astronomers using European Southern Observatory's Very Large Telescope, aka VLT, watched a study.
They're not very good at naming these things, are they? Large Array, the Very Large Telescope.
A lot of air and wind come out of
at least, make at those least words. It's not a sponsored thing. You know, it's the Pepsi Cola telescope.
Right.
It's the Frito-Lay's telescope array.
You know, that would be funny if these astronomers were talking about their telescopes, like NASCAR people talk about their cars. You know, the Valvoline Very Large Telescope did well today. A lot of credit to my Valvoline team and their Flintstone tires. Not Flintstone.
Flintstone tires.
You know, every other word
is them friendly names like, you know, Jennifer. Yeah, they found a star called S2 with Jennifer, the telescope.
That's the only one. Yeah. So anyway, so they watched the star orbit with what is widely presumed to be a supermassive black hole at the center of our Milky Way galaxy. They measured the Doppler effect from the black hole's gravity pulling in the star's light. The effect was And the effect was just what Einstein's theory predicted.
Of course it was.
So astronomers have monitored a star called S2. That's easy enough. with the VLT since 1992, hoping to use it as a probe of the gravitational field at the galaxy center. The star orbits Sagittarius A.
What?
Pronounced.
How about Sagittarius?
Oh, Sagittarius. What?
Sagarius? Well, I'm not even sure where that came from.
Hey, I almost said spaghetti.
Stegosaurus?
Okay. Yeah, Stegosaurus. A source of radio waves believed to be a black hole 4 million times the mass of the sun.
Wow.
At a distance of 3 times that between Earth and Pluto. Giving that sag A, see, there you go, an immense gravity.
I think it's pronounced Saga.
Saga, yeah, Saga. Saga's immense gravity, S2 completes its orbit in just 16 years, traveling at maximum 7,605 kilometers per second, around 17 million miles per hour.
That's
in an event like this, the star should behave as predicted by Einstein's theories of special relativity, special and general relativity. Isaac Newton's older, simpler laws of gravity lose their accuracy when applied to these extreme systems. Hey, by the way, they're knocking one of my ancestors there.
What? You're related to Isaac Newton?
I am.
Sir Isaac Newton?
Yes.
There's another good band name.
Sir Isaac Newton?
Sure, why not? Let's name bands after other bands. Like, hey, it's the Thomas Dolby Band, but Thomas Dolby's
not. It'll be the Led Zeppelin Band.
Right. Wait, or just something that's close to it, like the Red Zeppelin.
Yeah. By the way, you know, reading about this black hole, just thinking about how big they describe it.
Yes.
I mean, it's hard to even fathom how big it is.
So is that the measurement of the event horizon? We're going to have to talk to Dr. Pamela about this when we see her at Dragon Con, because how do they measure the size of a black hole? Because technically, the black hole is infinitesimal.
So what are you saying? Yeah, they measure from like edge to edge, or like from the event horizon that kind of feathers out, whatever. How does that work?
If that's what I'm wondering. That's how I want to know what it is. All right.
We will track her down and get an answer.
We will tie her down and beat the answer out of her. I'm not sure.
Or tweet her.
If we can't find her.
Actually, that would be a good question for her or Fraser on their podcast. How do you measure the size of a black hole?
Don't let me forget. Or you could see their live event in September. They're going to be at her house. Well, in her hometown.
Their live event horizon?
Event Horizon, another good band name. Yeah. Actually, that was a movie name, wasn't it? It didn't go so well.
Yeah.
Let's do the Hex of Strange Stories.
I just want to go for, we're the boys.
The what?
From Blues Brothers, you know.
Oh, okay. Let's move on. Where are we?
All right.
You know, we haven't done it in a long time.
What the chuck? What's up with that?
I didn't even know I had that. We haven't heard that audio fact in a long time.
You know what? Every time I hear that, I think of that old microphone I used to I think I recorded that on my Dell Axiom handheld.
Was that the one that got spilled with the beer?
No. It's the one I recorded the Oscar Mayer Wiener interview with.
Okay. Here we go.
It's good advice.
On to the Hacks and Strange Stories.
Hey, wait. I thought you had something to say for that. What the Chuck?
No, I just was, it was the next clip in line. I wanted to play it because I haven't heard it in a long time.
All right, that's fine.
You know, it's kind of like your favorite ringtone. All right. Police say a couple in their 60s woke up in their Palo Alto, California bedroom around midnight last Saturday to find someone looming above them wearing a mask or possibly a black t-shirt covering their face. Might have been Daredevil, you're not sure. The intruder asked for their Wi-Fi password. Give me your Wi-Fi password!
Wonderful.
No one gets hurt. According to the city press release, one of the residents sprung into action, shoving the intruder down the hallway and out of the house. The couple then called the police, which found the suspect a block away from the house. Police arrested a 17-year-old suspect for prowling, residential burglary, and providing false information about his identity. The police department did not reveal his name or as he is a minor. Police think the suspect entered the house from the side yard after cutting open a screen window covering, but could not initially determine a motive. Officers say they did not find any weapon on the teen, but the resident told police that the two kitchen knives had gone missing. Dun, dun, dun! Officers believe that this is not the only time this teen trespassed in an apartment searching for Wi-Fi that evening.
Really?
Someone else had called 911, reported that around midnight last Saturday, she saw a teenage male in the yard outside her bedroom window trying to get her attention. Ma'am, dude, what's your Wi-Fi password?
Dude, just go to the Starbucks.
No kidding. He can't with a ski mask. They'll think he's going to rob the place.
Yeah, he needs to take his ski mask / shirt off his head or whatever it was. And what an idiot.
Then he could be identified.
I'm going to tell you, if somebody came in my house and was looming over me in the bed, they would be lucky to get out of my house.
After he tried to get this person's attention in their yard, she and a male resident allegedly confronted the intruder, who told them he didn't have any data left and wanted to use their Wi-Fi. He told them to leave. Or they told him to leave. They didn't call the police until the next day when the male resident noticed his bike was missing from the backyard. Oh, man. Security footage showed the teen had moved the bike to the front yard before going to the window to ask for Wi-Fi. Police later found the bike near where they had arrested the suspect. Officers are recommending the district attorney add a charge of petty theft.
Hmm. You remember Jeff Foxworthy and his You Might Be a Redneck?
You might be an Uber. You might be addicted to the internet. If
you might have an internet addiction when you run out of data and you break in somebody's house to get their Wi-Fi password,
you might have a problem.
You might have a problem.
We've got another burglar story in a second. But first, we have the story of the vaping pilot. These are just... Craig, you gotta go on vacation more often. There's some great stories that pop up while you're gone.
Oh, there is.
All right, yeah, go ahead and take this one.
So on an Air China flight, had to enact emergency protocol. Sorry, I had trouble starting that sentence. during a flight from Hong Kong to the city of Dalian on Tuesday, all because a co-pilot tried to sneak in a vape break. Okay. So China's Civil Aviation Administration, CAAC, another great acronym, began investigating the alarm incident and found that the co-pilot tried to turn off the air recycling fans so that the vape plumes wouldn't reach the passengers. Unfortunately, he hit the wrong switch, shutting off the air conditioning system. I'm sure everybody, nobody noticed that, which affected the oxygen levels in the cabin. The oxygen levels dropped, the BBC reports. The crew released the oxygen mask for the 153 passengers aboard, and because the pressure dropped, the Boeing 737 descended from 32,800 feet to just 13,100 feet in less than 9 minutes.
That's pretty aggressive.
Yeah. So one of the passengers, wait a minute. So there's two, says the BBC reports, and then according to CNN.
Well, there's multiple news sources.
Yeah. So one of, I thought one was reporting on the other. One of the passengers spoke to CNN about their experience. I didn't think too much of it at the time. Really? But we didn't know what was going on, nor did the flight attendants, it seemed. Hobie Sun told CNN, but I am not physically hurt. But the psychological impacts linger. When I close my eyes, I see the oxygen mask dangling in front of me and someone vaping.
So, what's all that smoke coming from the bathroom?
What's funny is, I know this is a Chinese flight, but this is the law that they tell you not to break, and, you know, messing around with the smoke detectors in the bathroom.
But Craig, why? Why when you go in the bathroom? It clearly says no smoking. Don't tamper with the smoke detector. But there's an ashtray available for you.
I know.
Someone explain that to me.
Okay, so I figured the planes that they're flying today.
No, they're not that old. No, I've seen this on new planes.
Wait. Listen to what I'm trying to say.
Okay, all right.
We just flew, right? I had like four flights to get to Alaska.
Sure.
And so I went to the bathroom on one of them. I'm like, yeah, I said the same thing. There's an ashtray. Surely this plane is newer than
1975. Than
the turnover of our of everybody's. Yeah, whenever they really push to stop smoking on flights.
35 years ago?
Well, even 10. I mean, how old is this plane?
Right. No, but the no smoking thing has been around for decades.
Yes. I mean, it's obviously gained steam up until now, where it's pretty much frowned upon, period, or it's against the law. But yeah, why is there a stupid ashtray in there?
I could see this on a B-52 that was, you know, built in 1957 and probably refitted a few times, but yeah. A commercial airliner, I don't
we even saw an ashtray on a computer.
Maybe they're recycling just the bathroom doors.
Hey, remember that, Chuck? We saw the ashtray on the computer.
Donna just handed me this from our news desk. 1988, in-flight smoking is prohibited by almost all airlines. Smoking on domestic U.S. airliners, for instance, was banned on all domestic flights with the duration of 2 hours or less, beginning in 1988, with all planes being smoke-free by the end of the 1990s. Oh, my gosh.
So, still, the plane... Okay, so think, if that's the case, so think 2000 to today, that plane is older than 20 years?
Like I said, maybe the plane is new, but they recycled the bathroom door. We got this off of a 707 from 1965.
Right. But hey, I remember at the Computer History Museum, we saw the computer with the ashtray in it.
Yes.
Remember that?
Oh, I wish I had one of those now.
Yeah, I'm going to make a
podcast mixer with an ashtray in it.
I just thought that was fun. Yeah. I just thought that was funny. They had an ashtray to keep them working so they don't have to get up and leave their post.
Now, what would it be? A Mountain Dew dispenser?
Yeah.
What's the modern equivalent?
Vaping.
A vape tray? How does that work?
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah, just the computer's got a hose. You just
more of the oil. Yeah, it's like a hookah hookup.
Yeah, it's got a hookah. That's right.
All right, another burglar story. Accused burglar gets trapped in an escape room. What a great place to go. There's a video, if you follow our show notes through to geekology.com. It's from a news report from Vancouver, Washington, of a burglar who broke into an escape room business in a strip mall, took a cell phone, television remote, and a 12-ounce Bud Light can. He then forgot how he entered the building, then called 911. No word if the escape room plans on using his story of future advertising campaign. The escape room plans on using his story in future advertising campaigns. We're so good. How good are you? The Clark County Sheriff's Office responded to NW Escape Experience looking for the burglar who broke in. However, the burglar, when he called 911, said his home was being broken into and gave a fake address. What is, we got some dandies this week, don't we?
I know, right?
He reportedly took a cell phone, TV remote, and a beer from the fridge prior to calling authorities. The sheriff, quote, the sheriff said he had a burrito and he was settling in to have a breakfast and beer, I guess, and then got scared because he couldn't get out, Rob Bertrand, owner of NW Escape Experience, said. The burglar had broken the back door trying to get in and couldn't remember where the other door was. Apparently, turning to authorities for an escape at the time seemed like the right thing to do. Wow.
It's pretty amazing. You know what this reminds me of? Is those, there was somebody that broke in, was trying to break into a convenience store. I think it was in Charlotte. And they were going down a ventilation shaft and they slid and they fell and straddled a beam. And that's where they were stuck. They couldn't get out. They couldn't get out because their arms were up. And so they had to wait for the police to find them. All right, and not only did he get his bells rung, but he had to sit like that overnight.
People walking by taking pictures. Humiliation's a great crime deterrent.
All right, Chuck. I'm sure these are fake legs.
Okay. Also from Donna the Wonder Googleist. Mm-hmm. It turns out that airlines are required by law to have an ashtray on the lavatory doors of every plane, thanks to the Federal Aviation Administration's regulation. In a directive updated as recently as the year 2000, an ashtray is part of the, quote, minimum equipment, meaning that if something happens to any one ashtray, an airline must replace it within 3 to 10 days, depending on the circumstances. In case you were wondering, the European Union has similar regulations.
What?
So what's the theory behind the law? An FAA spokesperson,
hey, Donna, go Google that.
Who requested not to be named, clarified for us by email. Quote, even though smoking is banned, many people continue to smoke on airplanes. Great.
I don't think I've ever had that problem.
Provides a place to put a cigarette other than the waste bin. So we're encouraging bad behavior? We're giving them an out? What is
the... I would have thrown it in the toilet, not the waste bin. Or that's where paper's at.
Okay. It provides a place to put the cigarette other than the waste bin or somewhere less desirable where the ashes might start a fire. Yeah, because it might start a fire in the septic tank.
Ross, I would have never put it in a trash can.
An associate professor of political science and public policy at Brown University and author of Setting Safety Standards, Regulation in the Public and Private Sectors. Wow, there's a title killer for you.
Right.
What book did you write? Setting Safety Standards, Regulation in the Public and Private Sectors. Oh, I'm going to run right out on Amazon and get that. He weighed in too, saying, even with strict rules against smoking and with sensitive smoke detectors, we know that some people will, on occasion, break the rule. Breaking the law. Yeah. If there are safe disposal methods, breaking the rule will not lead to a serious fire risk, which could happen if, say, someone disposed of a cigarette and, say, the towel dispenser. Yet, aren't the ashtrays an incitement to breaking the law? Chiet responds, I don't see how this can be said to encourage smoking, since the smoke detectors are both very apparent and extremely sensitive. You really cannot get away with smoking in the lavatory without getting caught. But again, with the airline stewardess is knocking on the door because the smoke detector is triggered or tampering with, one does not want the violator to do anything with the cigarette that could cause a serious problem. Yeah. Sir, you're breaking the law. Could you please make sure to use the ashtray?
Okay. I've lost interest in this now.
Okay. So if you're gone, then so is our listener.
I get it. See, I would have thrown the cigarette in the toilet, Exactly. Even though it's got water, I mean, but water hits it and it just goes down. As
maybe that
out.
Blue water bursts into flames. I don't know. You figure it out.
Well, then they got a bigger problem than the ashtray.
We forgot to take a break. We are 44 minutes into this thing, but
let's
I
just
say
keep
we
moving.
Keep moving yeah, through. You
plow
bet.
Through it. Plow through yep. it.
We'll save our IDs and our little sweepers and things for next week. All right. Then that means we're on to remember when.
Remember? Futuristic skyscrapers of 1923.
Wait a minute.
Oh, sorry. Getting ahead of ourselves.
There we go. All right. Who's got the... You got the futuristic skyscrapers.
I'll do it. Those skyscrapers of 1923 were supposed to solve
you have to
traffic.
Soften your eyes. Skyscrapers!
But had a notable lack of Dwayne Johnson's.
Okay.
Sounds like Dwayne Johnson's a euphemism for something else.
Yeah, no.
So we're still waiting for our flying cars.
Bruce
back
Willis,
in
that's it. Bruce Willis.
Back in 1923, the magazine Science and Invention assured readers that they were just around the corner. And on top of it all, and to top it off, the buildings of tomorrow would be built to solve the traffic problem.
Okay.
I know, let's read on. An article in July 1923 issue of Science and Invention highlighted the idea of New York architect engineer Harvey W. Corbett as president of the Archaeological League
Not
of New York.
Archaeological.
Or architectural, excuse me. League of
was
New
he
York.
Building buildings or digging up bones?
Yes, he was. Corbett insisted that skyscrapers would continue to stretch toward the heavens. And flying cars would enable the people to live, who lived and worked in those skyscrapers to come and go as they please. Like the Jetsons, I guess, is what he's thinking. Or okay. They just go out the door. Skyscrapers were surprisingly controversial at the turn of the 20th century.
Yes.
Driven by concerns over fires, some cities adopted stringent anti-skyscraper laws in an attempt to save lives. And we can still see the effects of those laws today. Sydney, Australia passed the Height of Buildings Act in 1912 after a 14-story building was erected in the city in 1911.
Gadzooks!
There's
not enough oxygen up there.
They can breathe. The law restricted the new buildings to 150 feet.
Yeah.
Or about 13 stories tall because firefighters were unable to reach much higher than that. This caused Sydney to grow outward rather than upward. The law wasn't amended until 1957 to allow taller buildings. It wasn't just concerns over fires. Los Angeles adopted a height restriction of 150 feet in 1906 after San Francisco's horrific earthquake caused many as 3,000 casualties earlier that year. Okay, it makes sense. But the most ambitious architects and urban planners seemingly didn't think about things like fire safety. Just don't worry about those. We'll take care of those later. They weren't apparently much more concerned about with the latest technologies and the construction of towering buildings that were supposed to make cities like New York look hyper-modern. So I assume you're seeing these images.
Yep.
It says the drawing above showed how the skyscraper of tomorrow would reach 1,000 feet and make the Woolworth building, just 792 feet, look small. The skyscraper of tomorrow not only had height and also had girth. When the Woolworth building opened in 1913, it was the tallest building in the world. President Wilson famously pushed a button in Washington, D.C. to help illuminate the building in April 24th.
He helped illuminate it?
Illuminates.
Thank you President Wilson.
You hit the wrong button.
I like this diagram because it's got different roadways. Pedestrians get to walk up on top in the daylight. Then there's a level 4 pleasure vehicles with heavy trucking below. That's what I want. I want a separate highway system for the heavy trucking.
It looks this in the drawing. It looks like Amazon drones are making deliveries.
Gyrocopters hopping people from building to building.
Yeah. So they imagined that you would be able to take off and land on the roofs and it would eliminate the traffic below. That's the bottom line there. And
subways going between the different buildings. I mean, they're not too far off on some of these things.
Now, the subways, of course, came to pass, but not necessarily the helicopters. Well, we do have helicopters on roofs. Not to this extent.
Some buildings have a helipad, sure. All right, let's keep cranking away because
let's move along.
All right, world record holder. I remember this. I had Guinness World Book of Records in the 70s and 80s. Yes. I had a couple of them. And at the time, this is the guy who grew his fingernails. The last picture I saw of this man, he was probably in his 40s, it looked like. And his fingernails extended for maybe, I don't know, a foot. What would that be? About 15 centimeters off the end of his hand and in curled patterns. And it looked like snakes. Yeah. Well, yeah, they got longer. He kept going.
When we were kids, they were long, but they were like...
Right.
Yeah, they didn't seem very... I mean, they didn't look as long as this.
He's finally called it quits. It took a mini circular saw to hack off the keratin talons that had been growing on Sridhar... Huh. Chilal's left hand for the last 66 years. How are you a functioning human with...
He's never had a smartphone.
Never played the piano. Never had to pick his nose. The 82-year-old...
I'm sure his wife is really happy with him.
Well, how do you get in the car or take a taxi or anything? The 82-year-old Indian man told Sky News he started growing out his nails when he was 14 years old, according to Chilal. It all began with a grudge. After Chilal accidentally broke a teacher's nail while he was getting rowdy with a friend, the teacher told him, "You could never possibly understand the care needed to grow out long nails." Well, he set out to prove that teacher wrong. Quote, "I don't know whether the teacher is dead now or not." Well, you're 82. Two, and she was probably at least 10 years older, I'm guessing. Yes. Okay. I don't know if she's dead now or not, but it would definitely like to say that the thing for which you scolded me, I took it as a challenge, and I have completed the challenge, and now I am here, said Chilak.
By the way, John Miller Jr. asked, how did he go to the bathroom?
Yeah, don't scratch your butt.
Well, I said it in all fairness, he did have another hand.
But hey, you don't need a fing longer.
That is a fing longer.
Exactly.
Look over here.
It's like five fing longers. The grudge has earned him the Guinness World Book of Record for the world's longest fingernails. According to Sky News, they have a combined length of 29.8 feet. The longest nail, his thumb, is 77.8 inches. For most of his life, Chilal's nails have made his life more difficult. He said he has to wake up every half hour or so throughout the night in order to move his hand to the other side of the bed gingerly to avoid breaking the fragile rods. And his hand has been mostly useless because of weight. Yeah, that's a good lifestyle there.
How do you function? I'm serious. How do you function with that?
Well, he's chopped them off, and now he reached out to Ripley's Believe It or Not franchise. He approached them and said he was ready to cut his nails. So the Ripley spokesperson, Susanna Smigalopatz,
she said, finally.
He wasn't just going to sell his nails to anybody. He wanted to be memorialized in a museum. The nails are now on display in the Ripley's Museum in New York City. So how much does 30 feet of nails get you? Unfortunately, Ripley's wouldn't divulge the actual price that the company paid. Quote, but I will say it's a hefty figure and it will be enough for Mr. Chilal to retire.
Really?
Well, he's 82. I should hope he's retired now.
Wonder what their standard is on retirement. Actually, he's looking at he's on the side of those nails he hasn't been on ever. Yeah,
exactly. Dang, those things are ugly from this angle too.
Yeah. What the hell was I thinking?
I should really clean these things once in a while.
Oh boy.
Yeah, it's not a pretty sight. But good on him.
He nailed it.
Yeah,
I got it in twice.
Knew that was coming. Yeah, I told you with the Hammer Museum, we have a story about nails later. That was it. Okay, we want to give a real quick thank you to our patrons. Where's the music? There it is. Thank you to our patrons. This show is brought to you by you and you alone. Well, we're here as well. Thank you.
By the way, real quick, John Miller Jr. said, Wolverine has nothing on those guys, on that guy.
No kidding. And Freddy. So thank you to Kyle Nishioka, Abner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Mike Wills, Megapodtastic, Night Gig Studios, Gary Lindros, John Clifford, Leon, John Noble, Chris MC.
That John, wait a minute, whoa.
Yes, that John Noble. Alexis Duran, our John Noble, our very own John Noble, let's just say that. Our very own Chris MC and the one and only Alexis Duran, Saturday Morning Media, Steve Therian, Jorga Schrawin, and John Miller Jr.
Okay. Well, by the way,
we love you.
Saturday people. Morning Media, Grant Pachoco is now in the podcast Hall of Fame.
Yes, he is. Congratulations to him and Dr. Pamela Gay as well. So we.
I wanted to give them both a shout out because I think they deserve it.
Wonderful people. Maybe we can ride on their coattails. If we stick around long enough, we'll get in the podcast Hall of Fame just for being old.
Well, either that or by, they can put a good word in for us.
Longest running podcast with the smallest running audience.
We're going to be the Susan Lucci of podcasting.
No, Clinton already took that title for
us. Oh, that's right. So, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll let him have that.
He's waiting for his Parsec Award. That's cool. We got our Parsec. We're good. It's not the recognition. It's the people that support you, and you people are terrific. If you want to be one of those people, there is still room. We appreciate it greatly. It helps out a lot. There are a lot of costs involved with the podcast, with hosting and software upgrades and all kinds of stuff. Technorama/podcast. Oh, nice picture of our Parsec Award. Thank you, dear. We got it for parody comedy or some other reason. I'm not sure what that was all about.
I think it was being smart. I think that was the category.
Yes. Patreon.com/Technorama podcast, where in return for your generous donation, as little as $1 a show. See, because Craig was out, we didn't do a couple of shows, so they didn't pay. But now that we're producing, you give us a donation, we give you something in return, and we give you some extra content. We have some topics. I think this week we're going to start with, we usually start with a topic and see where it goes, and it could end up anywhere. This week is your TV guilty pleasure. So we'll see how that goes, and we'll start there.
I got one.
Okay, don't go there. Don't go there yet.
Okay, I'll save it. We're gonna record it in just
a little bit. Okay.
I got another one.
Last quick story. Stop trying to distract me. Is that the mansion from Blade Runner and House on Haunted Hill goes up for sale in Los Angeles? Yes, this house can be yours.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. It actually is a cooler looking house when it's not in the middle of the night.
Let's go in halvers.
Halvesies? Let's see what it costs first. One of Frank Lloyd Wright's most famous mansions, known as the Ennis House, is up for sale in East Los Angeles. And even if you don't know the house, you certainly know the movies that the famous building has appeared in, including Blade Runner in 1982, The House on Haunted Hill 1959, and The Replacement Killers 1998. The 6,000 square foot house can be yours for the low, low price of just $23 million.
That's it.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Mm. We'll go halvesies. Our Patreon people are doing us great.
Right.
Finished in 1924 and drawing inspiration from ancient Mayan temples, the house was built for Charles and Mabel Ennis, owners of a men's clothing store. The house was sold to radio announcer John Nesbitt. That John Nesbitt? Yes, that John Nesbitt.
Yeah, that John Nesbitt. In 1940,
all I can think of is Buzz Lightyear. Huh? I'm Mrs. Nesbitt.
Yeah, that's right.
Next thing you know, you're sucking down Darjeeling. Anyway, it was sold to him in 1940 and roughly 8 different owners through the rest of the century. The house's unique appearance made a favorite for filmmakers in Hollywood, first appearing on the screen in 1933 film Female. Fans of the 1982 sci-fi classic Blade Runner will recognize the house as Rick Deckard's apartment.
Yeah.
A dark and moody place. The film.
Actually, I was looking.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I was going to say, I was looking at the real estate pictures and I was like, oh, kind of looks familiar because obviously we've seen it in Blade Runner.
It looked a lot smaller. That doesn't look like 6,000 square feet. But
No. I mean, the architecture and stuff.
The outside has this kind of square block squirrely pattern, and the inside apparently also does as well. So, that's kind of interesting to carry that pattern through. Okay. Anyway, you can
see. I would only buy this house if it came with Harrison Ford in it.
Well, you can bring your son. Then you have Harrison at least.
Halfway there.
101.
There you go. Here he is.
A much, much younger Harrison Stepp.
Yeah.
All right. That brings us to the end of our show. But we have a question before you go, before we go. And our question of the week, which I will post on social media as well to get some other responses. But if you, dear listener, would like to get in contact with us, please let us know. Question of the week is, what is the title of your ideal TV show pilot? Where did you come up with this, Craig? You must have had something in mind when you asked this.
Yeah, mine is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 18.
Like 2018, not at the age of 18.
A-Team, A-Team.
Oh, A-Team. Oh, okay. Yeah. A-Team.
I want to see a TV pilot with the Ninja Turtles and the A-Team.
Sorry, I don't have the hearing aids in while I record this show.
Yeah.
And the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and A-Team. So you're looking for a mashup title.
Or whatever. No, if you got an idea for a TV pilot they should make, let us know.
Okay. So, like, Charlie's Angels in Mayberry. That'd be a pretty dull show.
Yeah.
All right, let us know. I'm going to work on that one. That's a good challenge, Craig. We'll see what people come up with. That takes us to the end. Hey, you know what? I'm going to play the out music right now. I can find it. I can find it.
It's on there somewhere. Well, you played Harrison. Surely you can find
there
this other thing.
There we go. All right. Thank you for your time and attention. If you watch this live on Facebook or you're watching it later via Facebook or YouTube or wherever you're getting the content, listening to it via podcast form, we appreciate that. You can find us on all the social media sites, etc., etc. Phone number, email, chuckchat.com/technorama. All that information is out there. We're not going to list them individually. It just takes up too much time. And the song goes by so fast. We only have 60 seconds to wrap this all up, and I am spending it wisely. Thanking you for you listening, your viewing. Thanking Craig for helping out.
Thank you,
Joe. My wife for doing the video engineering.
Yes.
And we will talk to you again real soon. Until then, tell a friend about Technorama and give me that binary high five action.
101. We ain't leaving till we're heaving.
101.